Are you sitting down? Good. Because this is a special report. The Journey into Comics Network is proud to present The Poor Report, your one-stop shop for everything news and topics of personal interest. Tune in every other Tuesday for exciting new episodes. And now, back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
You're listening to the Voice of Survival Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Nate Phillips.
What's up, everyone? Nate here with the Voice of Survival Podcast. And today, do I have something very extraordinary and special. In the grand scheme of where this all starts with podcasting and myself, it would not have even been a thing if it was not for a certain individual. And I'll tell a little bit of a backstory here. This individual was on a radio station show, Sirius XM, The Ellis Show. And as a first an intern and then a full personality on the air, and through that show, I felt comfortable to become a little bit more myself and to get out of the bog that is just being a kind of enclosed person. This person moves on and starts to do podcasting, and that kind of fast forwards our story a little bit. From one of this podcaster's first podcast, Josh figures it out. He says this great idea. I want to do something called an Incepticast. And I thought, wow, that's so, what is a podcast? This is so weird. Like, I'm listening to somebody who I've already heard on the radio talk as I already enjoy listening to them talk in a different environment where they're a little bit more themselves. And that was kind of my first introduction into wanting to podcast. So fast track a little bit further. I start my own podcast, the Journey into Comics podcast. And my guest at this time, Mr. Josh Richman, welcome.
Hello. Hello. How's it going? I'm so thrilled to hear you talk about how you feel like you've experienced some of your own personal development just from podcasting and spreading the gospel. It's a beautiful thing.
Man, it really is. It's so weird because to filter back to Journey into Comics, like I was on the show with you. We do the Incepticast, which I kind of want to bring it back and feature it on the network where I talk about it and then
you know,
play.
It's so funny since I did that, which ended up being, you know, a one-off episode. You know, I was going to try it with more, but I didn't with more other podcast ideas, but I didn't get the interest necessarily. But since then, I've heard other podcasts do it, like a Blank Check with Griffin and David did an episode about Inception that had like they called it like an Inception cast, and podcasts have been podcasting. And I'm like, oh shit, I feel like an innovator and people don't even realize it.
Yeah, man, we were like the first. That was so long ago. Yeah. 2014 is
24. The world was a very different place, Nate.
It was a safer place,
in so many ways,
for sure. that's one way to say it. But it's funny to me because from, you know, the spark that you gave me for podcasting, it's funny because Brandon always says that I gave him the ball to podcast and then he ran with it and then started a bunch of other podcasts that then made me want to start another podcast and then another. So then it was like, well, fuck, we've got all these shows. We might as well just have a network. We just did our 150th episode of Journey into Comics and it was like time to evolve. So my first guest for The Voice of Survival, if you guys are listening back, was Sarah. But in a really awesome, cool finality of a loop, Josh, I finally have you on a podcast, man, and I'm so excited to have you on today.
I'm really thrilled, and yeah, you were. It was so great to have you on an early episode of my own show, Josh Figures It Out, back when I was just figuring out the whole podcasting thing myself. After God, years of doing radio and then trying to strike out and figuring out all the editing and recording and hosting a show solo and all that. And I appreciate so much that you did it. So, of course, I'm happy to return the favor.
Yeah, man. So let's get down to the gravy today. My show, Voice Survival, is not about me. It's always about my guest. And I've talked enough about myself today. So let's get down to brass tacks, Josh.
Sure.
Right now, I'm going to ask you a question. Maybe you're not prepared. Maybe you are. But okay. I want to know where your journey into podcasting begins, because I really feel like that's a part of the puzzle I don't know. I don't know when it all started for you and what even got you into radio. I mean, I'm pretty sure you went to college to do communications, right?
No, but definitely my personal journey into podcasting definitely began in college, which at this point, freshman year of college for me was 2003. So we're talking about 14 years ago, which is insane. Because podcasts barely even existed back then, and yet it's true. When I first got my, you know, actually even when I was first looking for at colleges back in 11th grade, I remember visiting UC Santa Cruz, my alma mater, which has a beautiful college radio station, KZSC, and I. You know, it's a beautiful campus in many other ways. It's just, it's like it's situated in the forest, and it feels in some ways like it's like you're like living in like an elven village. It was just there's something very magical about it. But I saw this college radio station, and I was like, I already really loved music, and I think I even then had fantasies of like starting my own music show and forcing people to listen to all the weird music that I was listening to at the time, and there was, you know, nothing, their only choice was to turn it off, but I could like kind of control the airwaves. So it was a way for me to fulfill my own control fantasies. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. That's me psychoanalyzing myself at a high school age. But yeah, so that was actually part of the decision that made me decide to go to that school was I'm going to go and like, I'm immediately going to get started at the college radio station. So that was like, I technically went in as like an early computer science major because I'd done AP computer science, and part of me was like, maybe you'll be a computer programmer. You know, you're still figuring all this stuff out. But even as I was taking all these computer programming classes and other classes, I was immediately starting to volunteer at my college station and do shifts at like the real graveyard, like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. I remember walking through that forest like at 2 in the morning, like dead, dead tired, but just thinking about all the songs I was really excited to play for people. So I was in love really early.
Man, that's awesome. It must have been like kind of majestic to at 2 in the morning, like saunter through a forest to your nighttime radio job that you probably got to play pretty much whatever you wanted, right? I mean, they didn't really...
Yeah, nobody was monitoring this. Like, nobody was listening. I mean, if anybody was listening, it was like once or twice, like some other, like, you know, 20-year-olds. And it's not, you know, they had some level of authority, but it's not like they really gave a shit. So it was just pure freedom. And I mean, I started out just doing music stuff, but actually my senior year of college, I'd started getting really in with a bunch of theater kids and, you know, starting to do some student-written plays and stuff. And we got this idea to start what we called the KZSC Drama Hour, which was initially us reenacting a bunch of old radio serials, like it's like just getting old, like Superman and Flash Gordon scripts and like just all these like stuff from like the 30s. And like reenacting them in our cheesiest radio voice. But and it started with that, and then it eventually led to us like writing our own scripts. And that was really fun. And some of, you know, some of like the first things I ever wrote, we like read and reenacted on the radio, which was so much fun. Even got like a little bit of a cult. Like I was very, this is an early example of me kind of spreading the bug, because I started this show and then I left college about 6 months later, but this show kept going for about 3 years after I was gone, with just a rotating cast of people who had all kind of gotten the radio bug from this thing I'd started, which made me feel very good. So this is something that I think I've always inadvertently done throughout my career so far, is get other people kind of hooked on the magic of radio, which gives me a fuzzy feeling.
I think I'm going to call you the Podfather from now on.
Oh boy, I don't even know if I deserve that title.
Man, I mean, listen, you got to think about it from my perspective. I'm not talking in the grand scheme of all the podcasts in the world, but your show spawned my show, and now there are 8 shows, and they're more.
That's true.
Coming down the pipe, and now you have a whole, like, you're a part of Earwolf, and that's crazy. I mean, we can get to that in a minute, but we'll
eventually get there. But no, I mean, God. Stern, Adam Carolla, Mark Maron, all these people are like the real godfathers of everything we do.
Oh yeah, but man. Like Joe Rogan just did episode 1000.
That's truly unbelievable.
And
man,
like,
Rogan.
I think Corolla just hit 2,000 like 6 months ago or something.
Yeah, and Corolla, you know, Corolla too. If like he was, in high school, I listened to Loveline like every night for a couple of years. I was hooked on Loveline. I loved that show back in the Dr. Drew and Adam days. So he was an early one of the first radio people I ever really loved.
Oh, that's awesome. Did you ever get to meet Adam Carolla?
I did. He was on the Yellow Show once when I was doing it. Yeah, it was I think just one time, but yeah, that was a lot of fun.
So that's a cool experience. So let's dive back into your college days. You know, you did a little bit of the radio there and then you moved on. So what's the next
step
in this
evolution?
So
when I started this drama, you know, funny enough, as I was doing this drama hour, at this point, like, podcasts were a very small bore thing. And there were some other podcasts. Actually, funny enough, one of the other really early podcasts from that era was started by, you might know Jesse Thorne, who's the founder of the Maximum Fun Network and does a show called Bullseye. But at the time, he was doing a show called The Sound of Young America, also at KZSC. So this is a station that has spawned a couple of podcast innovators, if I could even put myself in the same company as Jesse Thorne, which I'm apparently doing. So this was kind of back before podcasts. I think of college radio in that era, in like the early 2000s era, as kind of the incubation for the current generation of like a lot of podcasters, along with, you know, obviously comedians, and they came from a lot of different places, but that was one of those places. But immediately after college, I thought that, once again, you can never predict your path. I thought I was going to be a music recording engineer. I'd taken a bunch of recording classes. I was looking at internships there. But on a whim, I applied to be an intern at SiriusXM. And I really wanted to get out of Los Angeles desperately. And I thought, hey, SiriusXM is a New York-based company, so this is a chance. If I get this internship, it's a chance for me to, you know, go to New York and explore that. Of course, when I got the call from SiriusXM, they were like, hey, we have this this little satellite studio in Los Angeles that needs an intern. And there's not a lot going on there yet. Really, we just have this one show called The Jason Ellis Show that you could help out with. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll stick around here and do that. And then I'll get into the music thing after my 3-month internship is over. Of course, my 3-month internship turned into a 6-year stint, amazingly enough.
Man, that must be a crazy thing for you that you're, you know, okay, I'm going to apply at Sirius. And it's one of those things I know because I don't put myself out there either a lot of times. You were probably thinking like, there's no way that Sirius will even respond to this, whatever. It's not a big deal. So
I had enough of an ego that I thought, oh, there's a pretty decent chance that they'll take my internship. But I definitely did not think that the internship would lead to me getting hired by any stretch.
And then also it being, of all places, in L.A.
Right. Exactly. So in this little cramped studio in the back of Swing House Studios that nobody could find compared to, yeah, the glory it is now.
So what's that, 2007? That you started your internship?
Yeah, that was 2007.
Wow, 10 whole years ago. that is insane. So we kind of, I know at least, and maybe some of my listeners know, I'm not really sure, a lot of your journey within doing the Jason Ellis Show and a lot of the things that entailed. And like I said, if you want to get into that and talk a little bit about that and how it leads you further into podcasting, again, that's fine. If not...
Yeah, I mean, God, there's almost there's almost too much to actually rehash. So I'm gonna assume that your listeners know a lot of the details of that. But yeah, suffice to say, I started as an intern, but Jason really liked me and put me on the air from time to time. And then around the time Mike Tully left for about a year... that ended up coinciding with me getting a promotion to full time. And then when Tully came back, it stuck around and became one of the gang and started and did some really, really insane stunts in retrospect and made some music with some crazy rock bands and directed a movie that had Tony Hawk and Benji Madden in it and ate chicken nuggets off a nude porn star and honestly too many other stories to recount, but it was definitely the best possible immersion into the entertainment industry that I could hope for. I mean, talk about really jumping into the deep end with all this stuff. It's just, it was, yeah, it was pretty mind blowing for a 21, 22 year old Josh.
So within that 21, 22 year old Josh, you know, you really got to do something, and you brought it up when you were just talking about how, while you're doing this radio internship that becomes a full-time gig, you got to do music. And
yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, honestly, I know it was goofy things, but there's a lot of your soul in the music that you guys put out when it was Taint Stick and then Death That Die.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's true of every single member of the band, is as like deliberately stupid as the lyrics were, and as much as we constantly insisted, this is just a joke. This is a bit for the radio. There's nothing serious about it. Like, you know, we put in hours and hours of rehearsal time. We spent a lot of time making those albums. Christian Hand spent an incredible amount of time like mastering them, and he's a genius. And we like, yeah, we absolutely poured our heart and soul into this dumb project, because I think every single one of us on some level had some kind of rock star fantasy, myself definitely included. And because I, you know, to this day, it's not like I can really play an instrument or anything. I can't play guitar or drums. I could sing a little bit and rap a little bit, but that wasn't going to be enough to get like some sort of musical career going without this radio show. So yeah, of course we took advantage of that and took advantage of the fact we had fans, and like, yeah, absolutely went for it. And I'm never going to forget like rapping and playing for a giant crowd that's cheering. That's like something I never thought I would get to do, and I've got that experience now under my belt.
Man, and those Ellis Mania events, I know that there are some that are marred in controversy, but overall, man, those are great experience for you, I'm guessing.
I mean, I'm never going to get in a ring again. I hated it, but now that it's in my rear view, it definitely, you know, it toughens you up and it makes you realize you could do things that you never would have done otherwise. And honestly, that's the way I think about a lot. Like my Ellis experience reflecting on it is there's a lot of really amazing and treasured memories and stuff that I would not miss. And I have zero regrets about doing any of it. And there's a lot of memories that are not so fun, particularly towards the end, it got kind of bad. But at the same time, you know, all that stuff is part of learning and growing and changing. And, you know, I know a lot of other people who have gone through similarly weird, circuitous paths into doing entertainment stuff. And everybody's got a crazy story coming up. I think that a lot of it is just kind of rite of passage stuff. And a lot of it teaches you how to, like, you know, you're almost, because you're thrown into the deep end, you're almost forced to, like, find your voice and figure out what you really want to do and stand up for it. And ultimately, if I hadn't, you know, gotten that internship with the Ellis Show, I don't know if I would have gotten to that place. So it's all for the positive in the end.
Yeah, man, you got to learn through life and the experiences you live how to just like let the things that hurt us become like a thickening of our skin.
Exactly.
And how to like go, okay, well, I was in that situation. That situation was really horrible, whatever it might have been. But I know in the future that if anything anywhere near that happens, I'll be okay. I'll survive. Like it's not going to be the end of me.
And yeah. I think that's you know, it's a real confidence builder. I think my skin really got thickened from it. And the fact I came out from the other side and was like, you know what, if I can handle some of the shit I handled here, then I can handle almost anything. So it ultimately, yeah, made me, you know, in many ways the person I am today, of course.
And now I'm going to ask this question because my brain is just not at the highest function sometimes. were you starting Josh Figures It Out before you left Ellis, or was that right after?
Oh, no, that was almost to the letter, like a week after. In fact, the very first episode of Josh Figures It Out was pretty much like an airing of grievances from my time towards the end of the show, which is why it no longer exists on the internet and you can't find it. It was really more of a venting session for me than anything else. And also a chance for me to like kind of answer some fan questions around it and be like, here, so you know, so I'm totally transparent. Here's my state of mind. Here's what I'm thinking. Here's why I decided to leave and what I plan to do next and all that stuff. And then I kind of figured, now that that first episode is done and out of the way and completely out of my system, now I can take this complete tabula rasa blank canvas to come up with a bunch of other crazy podcast ideas and do whatever I want finally. So I started doing that pretty much immediately afterwards.
God, and I mean, when Josh Figures It Out started, I actually went back. It's really, it's so bizarre to me. I need to share this with you while we're together here.
Sure.
I was listening on my own accord, just in retrospect and reflecting. I listened to the Incepticast that you and I did last week before I had contacted you at all about doing a podcast, okay? So I listened to it, and I was just like, wow, that was just like, I listen back and I hear how green I was and how I can tell on the phone I was extraordinarily nervous to talk to you. And you're just this this person in California, you know? And but again, I felt like in some ways I grew to know you as a person because of radio, and you know how weird that is.
You know, I bet if I went back and listened to that episode, I would probably marvel at how green I was too. Even after having done as much radio as I'd done, I'm like, it was very nerve-wracking to be like the solo voice on the mic doing this kind of thing. Something I don't think I ever mentioned on Josh Figures It Out, but I can mention now, is that before I had started, you know, before I could afford to like buy my own radio equipment and stuff, I was sneaking into the Ellis offices pretty late at night to tape a couple of those episodes. I think Will felt bad and kind of like gave me a little bit of a pass to just do that when nobody else was around.
Dude, that's awesome though. That's kind of like a cool, like, it sucks that the situation happened how it happened and you had to go through those things, but that's a really cool kind of behind the scenes thing that you got to experience. Like,
yeah. And you know, I mean, it's a little, kind of poetic, but the feeling of, you know, recording a podcast at like 1 a.m. just because it was the only time I could get away with doing it did take me back to my very first college radio shows in a way.
Man,
it came full circle.
That's what this episode today is kind of all about. But I was gonna say that when I was listening back to the old Josh Figures It Out, man, you did crowdsourcing for your music, and that was so clever.
I did.
You know. I don't know that anybody has attempted that since on a podcast, at least that I've found, which is so hard nowadays. There's like bajillions of podcasts.
You know, I don't think I have either. And actually, it's kind of it's a great idea that maybe I should consider bringing back for some of the shows I work with. We definitely, you know, a major tool of the trade that you rely on now for a lot of stuff is just kind of like running like art ideas by fans or segment ideas by fans and saying like, hey, what do you think of this? And if the response is good, then you do it. But like, you know, now that you have Twitter, all the social media stuff, it just gives you free rein to like any idea that you have, you can kind of beta test it with a crowd and see, hey, is this getting a response? Yeah. All right, let's try it.
Yeah. And it's weird that that's how the world is now, you know, like podcasts 20 years ago wouldn't work. I don't think.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Even if you were putting them out on like terrestrial radio, I think that exactly what you were saying about how you can go to your fans and say, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. What do you guys think?
At the same time, there's this. So one of the reasons I love it, and I think a lot of, you know, comedian celebrity types love it, is because so there is this special relationship with social media, and it is another way of like, you know, like Instagram or doing Periscope videos or whatever, interacting with your fans. But it's also, If you're somebody who gets like a lot of troll accounts, and there's like, if you're like somebody who like you post an Instagram and you get, you know, a lot of good comments, but also a lot of people saying you suck or stop posting selfies or whatever, you'll get a lot of that because it's very easy to do that on Instagram. Even if you're not a huge fan of a person, anybody can see a picture and write a comment. But listening to a podcast takes, you know, a significant chunk of time, and listening to a podcast on a regular basis, you really have to be a dedicated fan. So anybody who's actually taking the time to make it like far into a podcast of any public personality is like somebody who really seriously loves the person, which means that the hosts of these shows, I think, feel an ability to open up in a way that they couldn't on Twitter and Instagram and kind of talk about things knowing, hey, this is public, but it's not as public as this stuff. And you really would have to dig for it if you weren't a committed fan. So this is a place where I can kind of just like open up and tell my story.
Man, excellently said. So I'm going to ask you a question off of that question or off of that comment. What are some podcasts now that you're actually listening to? What are some of your favorites?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm going to try my best not to just plug stuff for the network I work for.
No,
and
feel
truth,
free to plug anything you want, man, for real.
I mean, the truth is, since I started actually working for a podcast network, the amount of podcasts that I listen to for pleasure has gone down. because I'm constant during my day job, I'm constantly listening to podcasts. So it means that during my off hours, I tend to listen to music more often, which is a little bit sad, but I think it's just kind of par for the course of working in the industry. Like, if you're a book editor, then I think you spend less free time reading books, etc. But I one that I can tell you that I've listened to a lot lately is Dissect. If you're into music criticism, this is one of the best music criticism podcasts out there. It's the concept is it's one guy who will do a full like half hour long podcast episode on every song in a single great album. So the first season of this show was like an 18 episode series just about Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly and like going through it every single song by song in like intense detail. And it's unbelievable. I mean, he's a great music critic and he's a great editor and it just all flows really nicely and you learn so much. And he's in the middle of season two right now. He's doing Kanye West, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. I love that show. Other than that, I mean, I have to get my serious politics fix somewhere. I like 538 Politics a lot. Those guys are, you know, no show is nonpartisan, but I respect those guys because they're all like a bunch of math nerds and statisticians, and they're really all about like data. And instead of looking at anything from a really left or right perspective, it's more about, okay, let's take this news story and like, what does it actually mean for the future of the country, kind of bottom line? It's kind of like a real no bullshit look at politics. So I respect those guys a lot.
That was 538?
538 Politics. If you know the website 538.com, it's Nate Silver's website. He's like the famous pollster.
Okay, sweet.
And so it's him and a bunch of other like data heads.
Awesome. I'm going to definitely have to check that out.
Yeah. So those are two non-Earwolf shows. And then obviously listen to all of the fine shows on the Earwolf Network.
And that's at earwolf.com?
That is at earwolf.com.
And do you have any, I know we, I think we're talking about this off air a little bit now. For those of the people, the listeners that don't know, you are an audio producer for Earwolf.
Yeah.
Can you detail a little bit about what you do with that?
I can. You know, it's funny, kind of on this trajectory for anybody who knew me from the Jason Ellis show days, since I've gone from a full on mic person to a full behind the mic person, I've kind of taken the Will Pendarvis path. I like to think of it to myself of like the almost behind the scenes kind of wheeler dealer boss who does all the assorted odds and ends for a show that makes it actually function. So I do a lot of stuff for different individual shows and I do a lot of stuff for the Earwolf Network. It's truly one of the things I love about it is it's a job that changes a lot. Like even every month, it feels like the type of things I do will completely change because some shows are like a traveling podcast that needs you to book studio time in like a bunch of different cities across the country. And some shows are really heavily edited, so it needs you to dive into Pro Tools and kind of like polish it and put in music and sound effects. And some shows just want to book guests, so you're trying to book celebrity guests. And sometimes you're doing stuff for the entire network. So I produce a lot of like advertisements for the Earwolf Network and a lot of social media stuff. I'm working on one cool project right now that is not live yet, but hopefully soon, where we're starting to debut some, I guess you'd call them skills for Amazon's Alexa that is all Earwolf themed, kind of trying cool. to go into that. I'm kind of trying to predict like what the future of this whole thing is. And I think smart speakers have been blowing up so much. And it seems like a major way people are going to be interacting with audio in the future is like through like directly talking to a speaker and saying, hey, play this podcast. So trying to find some, you know, kind of creative, cool ways to utilize that technology.
Oh, that's...
So it's just a million different things and it's really creative and fun.
Man, it actually sounds like a lot of fun. Like how you describe it, it is never a dull moment. And,
no, not at all. Plus, I'm working with like a lot of like honestly my comedy heroes. The dirty secret of being on the Ellis show is that like I thought the bits we were doing were hilarious, and I feel like we really went through like just like an amazing hot streak of amazing comedy when I was there. But it was never like my personal style or sense of humor, which I'm sure is kind of part of what made me work there. Is I was always sort of like the oddball out who liked really like nerdy comedy when the other guys were more on kind of like the like Howard Stern or Adam Carolla style tip, I guess. And even that's kind of simplifying it, but that's kind of a way over generalization. But I was always more into kind of like the alt comedy stuff and the character based stuff. And I got really into Comedy Bang Bang even when I was still back on the Ellis Show and Doug Loves Movies and How Did This Get Made, all that stuff. So in a sense, it was me going from like listening to these shows and being a fan of these shows to actually working directly with them, which was incredible.
Oh, that's awesome. Absolutely. So I'm going to ask you kind of like a little wrap-up question for the first part of the show.
Sure.
We've talked a lot about podcasting. I didn't know if there was anything you wanted to add about your podcast journey, because I want to spend like the, you know, you kind of limited us to an hour here. So I want to spend the last half really diving into your music and the and your, you know, what you're doing now.
I would be thrilled to talk about that. If there's anything I can say to put a nice bow on that, it's that, I don't know, it's weird for me to even think about that because I don't feel like my journey is anywhere close to completion. It feels like it's very much in kind of a middle territory where I'm learning so much just on the job every day about what it takes to be a great producer and to make a great show. And not only that, it feels like the entire radio podcast industry is very much in this like real transition point where nobody knows exactly what's going to happen even like 6 months from now. Nobody knows what's going to be a huge hit. It's just this wild west of experimentation. And I feel really privileged to be on the front lines of that, just trying anything out, seeing what sticks. As long as we're wrapping up the podcast section, I should say, like, listen to some of the shows I work on directly. Shows like Hello for the Magic Tavern is this incredibly incredible fantasy-themed comedy show.
Time out. Wait a minute. I did not know you worked directly with Hello from the Magic Tavern.
Wait, do you know Hello from the Magic Tavern?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Those guys are the best.
I just started it like a month ago. I think I'm like only 7 episodes in because, as you know, podcast life, it's hard to listen to them all.
Right.
But so far, I love the story.
It's truly one of my favorite shows. And the guys behind it are, what they do is just beyond me, how they can, they've, you know, they're past episode 100 at this point, and the way that they can continue to just like build this elaborate fantasy world and keep all the details in their head while still just keeping up like a constant stream of like really high level comedy. You know, the stuff I do for them is a lot, like they're actually based in Chicago, so I don't get to see them in person very often. I'm a lot more like from the network perspective, trying to market their show, almost get the word out about their show. Kind of spread the gospel of Hello from the Magic Tavern. So I'm very glad that you're a fan of that as well, and you should continue to tell your friends. Shows like that, shows like Improv for Humans, shows like with special guest Lauren Lapkus. We have like, there's just, I'm very proud to work at Earwolf because we're just working on, I think, some of the most interesting cutting edge comedy shows out there. This isn't a show I work on directly, but you should listen to Off Book, which is an improvised musical show with Jess McKenna and Zach Reno, where they're creating an entire musical on the spot. It's like nothing I've ever heard. Those guys are phenomenally talented. We're making so many cool things right now, and it's great.
That's amazing, man. Honestly, I will tell my listeners here that they will be able to find a link to Earwolf Network on the description for this episode. And anytime you guys need any kind of advertising, bring it our way. We'll play it on the air here. There's no questions about that.
Great. I'm happy to hear that, man.
I mean, that's the least I can do for you and all you guys have done for real, you personally more have done for us in the show. But let's move forward in our journey a little bit here now, Josh. We talked about it for like 30 seconds to a couple minutes there about you doing music with the Ellis Show. So you admittedly said you're not really a musician. You don't play an instrument, as it were. But you just dropped an album. So let's talk about it.
All right. Well, I can back up there for a second just to give that a little bit of context. Well, I am not a musician in the sense of able to like play an instrument. I just don't think I have the fine motor skills to play an instrument well. I got a guitar when I was 14, just like many other 14-year-old white boys before me, and attempted to learn and found that trying to make bar chords hurt my fingers and gave up.
totally know that, yeah.
Yeah. And I did a little bit of keyboard in college and a little bit of like music theory, but I think my hands are too dumb to really make that stuff work. However, I have been doing some form of electronic music since I was like 11 years old, and I got like my hands on a copy of Acid Music, and it started on my parents' computer and just started fucking with making samples and stuff. I've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah, and that actually bled back into what you did with the Ellis Music, obviously, and all of that stuff. But then now I want to talk about your new album, the Butterknife EP.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Okay, I listened to the whole thing.
Okay.
Okay, there's a couple little things I want to say. You put a lot of great samples from a lot of different places, okay? And it was cool because there were some that are really, really cleverly disguised. That I was listening through the fog like, is that Journey? I think that's Journey. You know?
There are a couple that are really cleverly disguised, and there are a couple that are really, really federally obvious. And that was kind of, part of the point is just to create this crazy collage of music.
But you did something that I don't think has ever been done before, and I just want to mention, you put jazz horns to Limp Bizkit. Okay? And I was just blown away. I was like, that's so clever, because it's ridiculous, but in the best way.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, first of all, I think, they say that everything comes back after about 20 years, which means that Limp Bizkit is due for a comeback in approximately 1 to 2 years. And I'm just trying to get ahead of the trend. It's going to become like reappreciated the way Journey was reappreciated. I firmly believe that.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, in some weird way, everything, like you just said, makes a comeback.
Yeah. So the genesis of this whole EP was I've made like a lot of different types of electronic music. I used to, make like hip hop beats, and I've done stuff that was more like, I'm trying to do like a real like symphonic composition with synths and stuff. And I did do some remixes that ended up on some Taint Stick and Death Death Die EPs, like you mentioned. But this was partly inspired by just like finally getting a copy of Ableton Live, which is really great at just like warping and twisting samples, and realizing I can try to do like the like sample-delic hyperactive mashup EP that I've always had in my head but was never quite able to put into practice before now. I've in the past sometimes done music that I would sing on or rap on. But this has none of my vocals. It's entirely vocals from different records that I love, all put together in hopefully strange, interesting, sometimes jarring combinations. I listen to a lot of electronic music. I love electronic music. I do find that a lot of the stuff that really makes it big kind of sounds cookie cutter and sounds the same. Sometimes it feels like, every week there's still like some EDM hit that uses the exact same template of like, starts with like a piano and a very serious verse, and then the synths ramp up and it's like dun 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 dun, dun, and then like the bass drop, and it's all such a template. And so a lot of this just came from me trying to find creative ways to break that template and do some sounds that were like genuinely surprising, because you can literally make anything these days. You could just come up with productions that would blow the minds of like anybody trying to make music even 20 years ago. They're like, how is this even possible? And like anybody with a laptop can do this stuff. So like, why not actually try to do this stuff and see what happens?
I want to say you used a sample. I don't know what the song is called, admittedly, but it's the "I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire" thing. The like kind of school sound.
That is that's from the Ink Spots. They're a great band from the 40s. You might know it because I think it was on the Fallout 3 soundtrack.
Yes, it absolutely was. But what I wanted to mention is it was super creepy and unsettling in the best way. Because I don't typically, when I'm listening to music, it's like if I'm mowing or if I'm in the car. And I happened to be like had a 45-minute drive, and I was like, okay, well, I'll just put Josh's album on through the surround sound, and I'll just get into it. And the last track genuinely was unsettling to me. But it wasn't like, oh, God, I'll never listen to this again. But it was just like, man, if you want to, like, creep somebody out with a vibe, put on the last track from the Butterknife EP, which the name is escaping me, and I feel like such a dick that I can't remember.
Oh, the song is called Genesis Sunfire.
Yes,
which
Genesis
is the
Sunfire.
Name of a famous Breatharian cult leader. He believes that he can live for months and months without any food or water.
Whoa.
Yeah, look him up. Also, yeah, the guy doing like the British-y monologue in the very first track, that's that guy. His name is Genesis Sunfire, and he's a real fucking weirdo. So,
wow,
yeah.
So you kind of used the guy in the first part of your album and then wrapped the song with his name. That's cool, like,
yeah.
Loop.
Yeah, trying to you know, have a little bit of thematic resonances in there.
I dig it. Did you do the album art?
You mean the very simple album art that took me 5 minutes? Yes.
Hey, man, nothing wrong with that. It's clever. You know, it's a butter knife. I mean, what more do people want?
It's just literally a butter knife. Yeah, sometimes just kind of like, a lot of it just came from like trolling YouTube videos and finding weird stuff. And like, let's throw that in the mix. I kind of set myself the restraint going into it of, you know what, any sound I think I want to use, I'm not going to change my mind. I'm just going to find a way to use it and make it work instead of going back. It's almost just kind of like, damn the torpedoes, we're in this, we're going to use everything we have and not leave anything wasted kind of mentality.
And work with what you got.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. I do really like the music. I think that it's controlled chaos in a beautiful way.
Thank you. Yeah, if you think controlled chaos with jazz horns and Limp Bizkit and Ink Spots and Breatharian sounds like your jam, listeners, you should definitely check it out. It's free on SoundCloud. I couldn't sell it if I wanted to because there's so much copyrighted music. So download it to your heart's content.
I mean, it's awesome. Like I said, now I want to ask you a question. You make this music, but I'm guessing that this music isn't really where, like, I want to talk about the bands or the artists that inspired you to be the musician you are. Like, who set you on your path to music?
Well, you know, I wasn't joking. I was a huge Limp Bizkit fan when I was in high school, along with like a System of a Down and Nine Inch Nails, Red Hot Chili Peppers. I really grew up listening to K-Rock was, I think, you know, all that stuff was the first music I found that really felt like my music and not like my parents' music, which is what you listen to like for the first 10 years of your life. It's just whatever your parents listen to. So I discovered that in high school and then started, eventually getting more curious about what else is out there that's not played on the radio. And then it actually took me a while to get into the old stuff and get into classic rock. The first stuff I found was like indie bands like The Walkman, The Shins, The Strokes, The Decemberists. All these were early favorites. But I always had an affinity for the noisiest, weirdest shit I could find. So that led to an early interest in like, death metal, because I was like, holy shit, this is so loud and intense. And like grindcore, like The Locust and Napalm Death, I loved. And then also a lot of electronic music, not necessarily like techno or club stuff, but I really fell in love early with Aphex Twin, Autechre, Square Pusher, Warp Records guys like Kid 606, Kid Koala, lots of people who are just like, we're gonna make electronic music that isn't necessarily fit for the dance floor, but is just kind of like taking advantage of all these new sounds and techniques and throwing them together and seeing what happens. Those guys were all hugely influential to me.
Excellent. Now, within music, now there's always a point, at least I feel, because, you know, now I've got a band that's touring and playing and doing things. But I feel like there's a point in every musician's life where something happens that changes you, and it's usually a concert. So did Kid Josh ever experience a concert that you were just like, fuck, I have to do this now? Like, there's no other path I can really take other than to find my way into the world you found your way into.
Man, I'm trying, you know, I don't know if I could pin it to a single concert. I could tell you, I mean, some of the most memorable concerts of my early life, the very first concert I went to was 311 when I was 14 years old. which was like way louder and moshier than I was expecting. And I think it was just kind of terrified as like a shrimpy little 14-year-old. But it was a great entree into it. I went to Coachella every year of college, and I've experienced a lot of amazing bands that way. I think that actually seeing bands like Wolf Eyes, Secret Machines at those shows, the Pixies during their very first reunion tour, definitely sparked a lot for me. And I was like, wow, this is just an incredible energy going on here. Maybe one that's slightly different from that, but maybe, yeah. You know, maybe the best and most inspiring concert I went to in college was Joanna Newsom. Do you know Joanna Newsom?
I actually do not.
I think she's Bay Area based. She is a harpist. She's a harpist with a very interesting kind of high-pitched elfin voice who does these incredible, intricate, Joni Mitchell-esque compositions that can unspool for 9 or 10 minutes and include a lot of like really poetic language, but is also weirdly kind of hooky and catchy despite how intimidating all that sounds. I saw her play her entire second album with in a very like kind of quiet environment with like a very respectful quiet audience all sitting down watching her, and it's unlike the typical kind of concert crowd where everybody's just kind of like partying and raging, this was just like, we're all going to like sit and kind of like just bask in this music. And I remember just really being spellbound by it. She's to this day one of my favorite musicians. Her stuff is really, really beautiful. And I probably could not be more opposite the stuff I was doing on Butterknife EP, but nonetheless, it kind of gave me an idea of like, if you have an idea and voice and ambition to do something different, you can do really anything you want if you set your mind to it, I guess.
I could not agree more with that. So I'm going to jump over here, and I want to know, you just released the Butterknife EP. You're working with Earwolf. Is there anything coming down the pipe that you're excited about that isn't out yet that you wanted to talk about today?
Well, I hinted at this Amazon Alexa project, which I put a lot of time into. And even this, in a way, was going full circle. I think I mentioned that I had, a little bit of like computer classes and thought I was going to be a computer software designer way back in the day in college. And I'm still definitely not a coder by any means, but this was kind of me like diving into tech development for the first time. And it was really, it kind of felt amazing to do in Scratch that hadn't been scratched in a while. At the moment, my main like creative outlet for like my stuff is music, like this album I just released. And I think I enjoyed making it enough that I'm going to continue making more of that. I don't know if I'm going to be hosting another podcast again. And I will definitely host a podcast again. But if I don't think I'm going to host one in the immediate future, just because all my podcasting energy is going to collaborating with some incredible other people. And there is stuff that I can't talk about yet, but all I can say is keep watching earwolf.com, and there's going to be some stuff coming even in the next couple months that I'm really, really proud of.
I learned this phrase recently. It's called in development.
Yes, these are shows in development.
And when you have that, you feel very businessy and professional, and I'm like, what the hell,
I sure do, man. I'm 31 years old, and I have a 9-to-5 job in an office, and it's a very creative, wonderful 9-to-5 job, and I love the people I work with. But it is also definitely like, holy shit, I'm like a businessman who wears button-down shirts, and it's weird.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. You're just as long as you can, as long as you can wear it and feel confident in it, that's all that matters,
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of, jump back to the podcast because I actually forgot a totally obvious question, but how did you get involved with Earwolf, actually?
Oh, yeah, I guess that's a whole part we kind of skipped over. Let's talk about that. we should talk about that. So, I was doing solo podcasts. I was doing Josh Figures It Out. I later followed that up with another podcast called Accept the Mystery, where me and my dear friend Jackie Lechtel-Zay talked about every single Coen Brothers movie. I think that's still online somewhere if you want to check that out. I was real proud of that that miniseries. So two things were kind of going on simultaneously. One was For a while, I got a job freelancing with another podcast network called AfterBuzz TV. This was purely just like sitting in engineering shows, real like bottom level stuff. But, you know, happy to kind of have a paycheck and be around, you know, podcasty types. And then simultaneously, I was getting really involved in taking classes at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater here in Los Angeles. I don't know if you're familiar with them. But it's a really incredible comedy theater that some of the current stars of comedy, some of the funniest people out there, all came from this theater. And they teach a lot of classes, and lots of like aspiring comedy types and entertainment types also take classes there. So I thought, if nothing else, this is just fun and a way for me to kind of exercise my voice and meet people. So I started taking comedy classes. I was pretty good. Another thing that being on the Yella Show trained me for is it turns out I was pretty good at improv. So I was able to make some really funny friends. And I had this podcast out with, so I invited them on my podcast. And they became a steady stream of guests there. And doing all this set me up to eventually, like, more or less, like, pitch myself to Earwolf saying, hey, I'm a huge fan of your stuff. I used to work at Sirius, and I also like make these podcasts. Check this out, which was a way to kind of get my foot in the door. Eventually, like I got the courage to approach people like Matt Gourley, the genius behind Super Ego and Pistol Shrimps Radio, who does a lot of stuff with Earwolf. Asked him to be on Accept the Mystery. He came on. He talked about the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? It was wonderful. And while he was doing that, I kind of pitched him and was like, hey, by the way, you know, anything, you know, opens up over at Earwolf, give me a buzz. And I think he remembered me enough that when something did open up, I was memorable, and they took me in for an interview and liked me. So, you know, it's kind of, I was unemployed for about a year and a half, and it was not the easiest time for me, but it's amazing how all these different things that you thought weren't going to lead to a job that was just for fun, like taking comedy classes and like having guests on your own little dumb podcast and all this stuff, eventually did like put the pieces together that got me that job. And you kind of realize that like none of these, you know, no step you take on this path is insignificant. Everything, even if you don't see it at the moment, kind of like plays this larger role in what you end up doing down the line.
Oh man. It's like, you're such a wordsmith for real. Like,
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that your sentiment with every step being important, it's strange. And just to really, again, where this whole episode is full circle. So it's like, in a really super bizarre way, the end of your tenure at the Jason Ellis Show spawned, well, my network and all, and all the things that's going on there, and it spawned you to move on and be able to do other things that have led you to a place where it sounds like genuinely you're in a very happy place in your life right now.
I am. This is, you know, this is the kind of stuff I always wanted to be doing. Even when I was interning with Ellis, I never wanted to be on the air, really. I did it because they needed me, and I ended up having a lot of fun doing it. But I always kind of figured I was going to eventually take more of a backseat role. And like, I feel like my calling in many ways is to like just kind of let other hilarious people do their thing, and then like kind of like take it into the kitchen and make a couple of chops and add a couple of spices and put on the finishing touches that make their project go from good to spectacular. And I love doing that. And I love feeling like I can kind of be part of these other like amazing projects. And it feels great.
You're like the decorator that adds sprinkles to cupcakes.
Yeah. Except I don't know if that's like a dedicated job all by itself. I think usually the person who makes the cupcake also adds the sprinkles. But in general, yes, something like that.
Yeah, but you get me. Like they just like they want to be useful in the kitchen. They're like, hey, I know right. How to make them look really good. That's what I have for you. Well, Josh, I don't know if there's a whole lot more we can really dive into today. We're running out of time here. So I'm just going to kind of open the floor up for you. If there's anything at all you would like to close before we get out of here, say, I do want to, at the end of this episode, if you will let us, play one of the tracks of your choice from the Butter Knife EP to kind of close out the episode. And we can obviously discuss that off air. It's not a big deal
sure.
there. But or unless you just want to name it as we end the episode, that's fine.
You know what? Play track three for people.
Is that, do you remember?
Give them a buzz.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, play track three. You know, I think, I don't know if that one is my favorite, but I think it's the one that I most enjoy playing for unsuspecting people and being like, hey, check this shit out.
Is that track, is that Do You Remember?
That is Do You Remember, yes.
That's got my awesome jazz horn Limp Bizkit
it does.
Piece in it.
Yeah, that's the one.
Absolutely, man. I can't. Oh, that's so great that we get to play that on the show. That's what I was hoping to say. But as I said, man, is there anything you'd like to add before we get out of here today?
God, I feel like we kind of covered the bases and took everything full circle. I mean, I really just want to say that, like, I really do feel like I've, almost against all odds, ended up in like exactly the place I was meant to end up at. And since this does seem like it's a podcast about kind of following different people's creative journeys, I just want to say that, like, you really do. It's impossible to see like the destination when you're in it. And sometimes it could feel like you're just completely lost or directionless or have like no idea what the hell you're doing or if any of this means anything. But like when you look back on it, when you've gotten to a settled place, you realize that like every step matters and every piece matters and every person you meet along the way matters. And I'm going to end on like the biggest Chinese fortune cookie cliche ever, but it is not about the destination, it's about the journey. And so appreciate the journey.
Awesome, Josh. So I want to say thank you so much for coming on to the Voice of Survival podcast. This is episode 2, folks. As always, you can check out Journey into Comics on all the different social media sites. JourneyIntoComics.com is where you get the whole network, all 8 shows or all 7 shows, and then you have to go to gameaddicts.podbean.com for that. That's a whole nother story. Follow us on all those sites. As I said before, you're going to be able to check out Earwolf Network. In the description below, we'll link you guys there. We'll also link you guys to Josh's Butterknife EP album. So if you like the track, Do You Remember? I'm sure you will. It's totally different and radical. You can go download that for free. Josh, again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Nate.
Hey, I totally appreciate it. You're welcome here anytime, my friend. So if that's going to do it for this week of the Voice of Survival podcast, as always, I am your host, Nate. That was Josh. Take care.
We're going to go.